We are continuing to look at the story, how God's upper story and our lower story have been intertwined since the beginning of time. So far, we have looked at how God created the universe with the intent of being able to enjoy all of it while having a great relationship between us and Himself. Unfortunately, mankind chose a different path and a different vision for that relationship, and that's how sin became a part of who we are. Ever since then, God has moved in and out of the lower story in an attempt to get it back in sync with His upper story. God promised Abraham that He would work through Abraham's family to make this relationship get back on track. And God did that, working alongside Joseph and Moses and the judges and the kings to get everything into place for the one person who could come and make everything right again. That's Jesus. Last week we looked at Solomon and how Solomon's life was markedly different from the life of his father David. David lived his life, despite his sins, as a man who loved God with all of his heart. David realized his sins and he repented of them immediately. Solomon, on the other hand, allowed himself to slowly be influenced by sin until he ended up falling completely away from his relationship with God. It took Solomon looking back at his life as he prepared to die to realize the horrible decisions that he had made that affected not only him, but also affected the future of his kingdom. Despite all of his mistakes, Solomon's reign as king was profitable for both him and the Israelites. Solomon did a great job of expanding the physical kingdom of Israel and building many structures that showed the richness of God's blessing to his people. The temple that he built, it was remarkable and filled with beautiful architecture, sculptures, gold, and all kinds of refinery that showed that God was blessing the Israelites. But because Solomon strayed from following God, the people ended up suffering. He had forgotten the advice that his father had given him before he became king. In 1 Kings 2, verses 2 through 4, and we looked at this last week, David shares the success, his secrets of success, on how to be a great leader with Solomon. This is what David says in 1 Kings 2, verses 2 through 4. I'm about to go the way of all of the earth. So be strong, act like a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in obedience to Him and keep His decrees and commands, His laws and regulations as written in the law of Moses. Do this so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go, and that the Lord may keep His promise to me. If your descendants watch how they live, and if they walk faithfully before me with all their heart and all their soul, you will never fail to have a successor on the throne of Israel. As we see throughout the story, there's a theme that keeps recurring over and over again. This theme has happened ever since God created mankind, and it's happened especially since He began working through Abraham's family tree. The theme goes a little something like this. As long as the Israelites remain faithful to God, God blesses them. It's when the Israelites stray from following God, then God withdraws His blessings from them. One of the wisest things we can do as we look at the story is understand that we can learn from the Israelites. And really, it's in our best interest to learn from the experiences of others. It doesn't do us any good to hear about the mistakes that the Israelites made if we refuse to learn from them and apply them to our lives. That's one of the key components to having the Bible, is application to our lives, because knowledge and wisdom given to us through it without applying it make it useless. It's at the end of his life that Solomon realizes this. He's been given all the wisdom he needs to lead the people properly, but he hasn't applied it like he should. And that's happened because he's fallen away from remaining faithful to God. And because he's fallen away from remaining faithful to God, God's blessing is withdrawn from both him and the people. Solomon, at the end of his life, he got overly aggressive in his building projects. He wanted to expand his kingdom to be bigger and better than any before it. And so to do that, he overtaxed the people and he made life difficult for them. Not long after Solomon died, his son Rehoboam took over as king. Because of Solomon's many sins, God was going to split this kingdom of Israel up. Listen to Ahijah, a prophet. Listen to him share with Jeroboam, a young man that Solomon had put in charge of the labor of Solomon's building projects. A young man who was up and coming. A young man who was doing great things. And Ahijah shares with him exactly what God is going to do in 1 Kings 11, verses 30 through 33. Ahijah took hold of the new cloak he was wearing, and he tore it into 12 pieces. Then he said to Jeroboam, "Take 10 pieces for yourself, for this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. See, I am going to tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hand and give you 10 tribes. But for the sake of my servant David and the city of Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all of the tribes of Israel, he will have one tribe. I will do this because they have forsaken me and worshipped Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Molech, the god of the Ammonites, and have not walked in obedience to me, nor done what is right in my eyes, nor kept my decrees and laws as David, Solomon's father, did." Once Solomon found out about this, he tried to have Jeroboam killed. He tried to stop this split in the kingdom, but God had to preserve his plan. So Jeroboam escaped to Egypt, and he stayed out of Israel until after Solomon's death. Because of his inability to remain faithful to God, Solomon had caused this split to happen, not Jeroboam. Once Solomon died and Rehoboam became king, Jeroboam returned back to Israel to try to smooth this situation over. And this is where we pick up in the story today. In 1 Kings 12, verses 1 through 5, we get to see the beginning of Ahijah's prophecy to Jeroboam come true. Jeroboam offers the people's loyalty to Rehoboam as king if only Rehoboam would take the well-being of the nation into account. This is what 1 Kings 12, verses 1 through 5 says. Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone there to make him king. When Jeroboam, son of Nebat, heard this, he was still in Egypt, where he had fled from King Solomon. He returned from Egypt. So they sent for Jeroboam, and he and the whole assembly of Israel went to Rehoboam and said to him, "Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you." Rehoboam answered, "Go away for 3 days, and then come back to me." So the people went away. We get the idea here that Rehoboam wants to think on what the people have presented to him. But the truth is, Rehoboam is unwilling to listen to either Jeroboam or the people. Not only does Jeroboam appeal to Rehoboam, the new king, but he appeals to the elders of Israel as well. These are the same elders who had ruled their people alongside of King Solomon and seen the error of his ways and seen his wisdom that he had written down for them. The elders have heard the pleading of their people, and they offer Rehoboam some solid advice about leading the people of Israel. In 1 Kings 12, verses 6 through 7, this is how Rehoboam and the elders of Israel's exchange went. "Then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who had served his father Solomon during his lifetime. 'How would you advise me to answer these people?' he asked. They replied, 'If today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants.'" The people of Israel are yearning to see that their king cares about them. They want to know that he hears them and that they're valuable to him and his kingdom. What Jeroboam and the elders of Israel are trying to do is they're trying to set Rehoboam up to successfully lead the people of Israel. But the advice of Jeroboam and the elders is not good enough for Rehoboam. In fact, he rejects it. He's likely seen the wealth and grandness of his dad's kingdom, and he wants his to be just like that, even better. So he asks his childhood friends, his buddies, what they think he should do. And we see in 1 Kings 12, verses 8 through 11, that their advice is vastly different from the wisdom of Jeroboam and the elders of Israel. But Rehoboam rejected the advice the elders gave him and consulted the young men who had grown up with him and were serving him. He asked them, "What is your advice? How should we answer these people who say to me, 'Lighten the yoke your father put on us'?" The young men who had grown up with him replied, "These people have said to you, 'Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but make our yoke lighter. Now tell them, my finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips, I will scourge you with scorpions. Rehoboam's buddies knew what Rehoboam wanted to hear. They knew that he wanted wealth and power and prestige. He wanted his kingdom to be greater than his father's. And they want that for themselves too. So what they do is they tell Rehoboam what he wants to hear so that they can be a part of his inner circle. They tell him what he wants to hear, not what is best for him. It's at this time in his young kingship that Rehoboam could have used some of his father's wisdom that he recorded in Proverbs. In Proverbs 12:15, this is what Solomon wrote. Solomon says, "The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice." Later on in Proverbs 18:15, this is what Solomon writes. "The heart of the discerning acquires knowledge." Somebody seeking truth, they acquire knowledge. "For the ears of the wise seek it out." Paul the Apostle likely learned from this situation, because later on in giving advice to Timothy, he writes this in 2 Timothy 4, verses 3 through 4. "For the time will come when people will not put up with sound teaching. Instead, to suit their own desires, they'll gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth and instead turn aside to myths." It's important that we learn from the experiences of others. In this situation, we can learn that a wise person seeks wisdom and honesty regarding their decisions. They don't just seek what they want to hear. Rehoboam had the opportunity to lean on the wisdom and the experience of Jeroboam and the elders of Israel, people who had led the people of Israel and been among the people of Israel all their life, yet he didn't do it. Instead, he chose what he wanted to hear to satisfy his own ego and to satisfy his own desires. This wasn't what God wanted for his people, and it's not what God wants for his church either. Romans 8:28 tells us this, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." Because of Rehoboam's unwillingness to listen, a difficult division happens in the nation of Israel. Because he refuses to listen to the people, because he cares more about his desires, the nation ends up being split into two. Jeroboam and 10 of the tribes of Israel head north and they form the nation of Israel, and Jeroboam is their king. The remaining two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, stay in the south where Jerusalem is, and they form the nation of Judah. These two kingdoms are a hard division for the people to stomach. It's a lot like the Civil War or the Revolutionary War that happened here in the United States. Families were forced to choose which side they stood on. Friendships, relationships, families, all of them were all torn apart because of the division of a nation. Much later on in Jewish history, Jesus is going to utter a phrase to the Pharisees that's later shared by Abraham Lincoln as he ran for his Illinois state Senate seat. The phrase is this: "A house divided against itself cannot stand." The idea is that your house, your body, your church, your government, your relationships, they have to be moving towards unity. If they're not, they will not continue to be united. Instead, there will be dissension and division. This kind of thing is something we're all guilty of. We're all Rehoboam at one time or another in our lives. We all choose what we want over what is the best thing for our family, for our relationships, for our church, and so on. What we have to realize is that this life is hard enough as it is when we have the outside influence of Satan trying to tear us apart, that we need to seek unity inside of our house. History has shown us, as has this part of the story, that when people who were supposed to be on the same page turn against each other, then they're doomed to fail. Our human inclination towards sin doesn't allow us to forgive and forget as easily as God does. But as Christians, we're called to live a life that does its best to mirror the life of Jesus, So to fight that inclination towards division, we have to seek unity with love, even if that means we aren't getting our way. The division that happened between the nations of Israel and Judah, it wasn't one that could be easily fixed. So we get to see that God can still work through this division. In this case, God is able to preserve the lineage that is going to deliver Jesus, the Messiah, the chosen one, the Savior of all humanity, to us. Even though this division isn't ideal, God can and does still use it. Believe it or not, Rehoboam not listening to the wise counsel of Jeroboam and the elders of Israel was made to happen by God. This was Solomon's punishment for his continued sins against God. Listen to what God told Solomon in 1 Kings 11, verses 9 through 13. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command, a lot like David. Almost the complete opposite. So the Lord said to Solomon, "Since this is your attitude and you have not kept my covenant and my decrees, which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your subordinates. Nevertheless, for the sake of David your father, I will not do it during your lifetime. I will tear it out of the hand of your son, yet I will not tear the whole kingdom from him, but will give him one tribe for the sake of David my servant and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen." We said earlier that a house divided against itself cannot stand. Man-made divisions happens. That's just a fact of us being sinful, imperfect people. But we need to take it a step farther and say that a house divided against God will not stand. A house not obedient to God will not stand. God kept doing his part over and over and over again for the Israelites. But the Israelites and their leaders, they kept failing God over and over and over again. They weren't even close to being on the same page with each other. And because of that, the kingdom that God had built fell apart. It wasn't God's fault. It was the people's fault. Because the Israelites distorted God's upper story through how they lived their lower story. They weren't what God wanted, and they weren't what God hoped for them to be. This is a tough time in the history of God's people. Not much goes right for them. And as we'll see in a couple weeks, things get even worse. For us to learn from how bad things are for the Israelites, we need to be people that seek unity in our relationships, seek unity in our families, seek unity in our church. When we don't do that, when we seek our own desires first, things don't go quite as smooth as they should. When we don't do that, we need to be prepared for the division that we're causing, and we need to accept the consequences of it. We'll see this in the case of Israel and Judah in the next couple weeks. When you're willing to chase unity through love, you have to be prepared for when other people aren't willing to do that. While you might be ready for it, others might still have to work through to get to where they can be ready for it. Because unity doesn't happen when one side wants it and one side doesn't. Unity happens when all hearts desire to be on the same page. When they do this, they're valuing the relationship above everything else. Doing that shows that they have a heart seeking to be like God's. And when we have a heart that's seeking to be like God's heart, it means that we begin to exhibit the fruit of the Spirit that are found in Galatians 5, 22 through 23. These are things that value the relationship. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Paul says that these things have no law written against them. They are universally praised. To have a heart similar to God, we need to strive to have all of the fruit of the Spirit, not just some of it. That means that We need to be willing to change our lives as necessary to meet God's expectations for us. When we're not willing to change our lives to meet God's expectations of us, we're sinning because we're saying, God, I know better what is best for me than you do. When we say that, we're taking on the very mindset of Adam and Eve when they sinned in the Garden of Eden. They chose their vision for what they thought the relationship between them and God should be like. They didn't choose the relationship. They chose themselves. And that choosing of sin over God has always been our problem. We've always wanted to do what is right for me, and we've always tried to justify it. But God doesn't reward that. God rewards obedience to the things that he says are important for us to do. He rewards obedience to the things that he knows are most beneficial for us. If the Israelites had just listened to God, then they would have continued to receive his blessing. Instead, they chose themselves and their own wants and desires over what is best for them. That's a lesson that we have to learn from. Let's pray.